Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. And boy, do we have a treat for you. The news. No, it sucks, but we're going to take it together. And what we've got as we do that, Sabrina returns to the show. Abilina Sabrina of Twitch on our Twitch now. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. The news is such a treat.
It is. I was going to say, but don't worry, we've got some good news. And let's see. No, yes. Yes, we do have a little bit of good news today. It'll take us a bit to get to, but no, we really do. It's going to be okay. Anyway, we're glad to have you here. We always have a lot of fun on the show. For people who might not be familiar with your work, you want to talk a little bit about what you do on your Twitch channel and on YouTube as well?
Sure. So on my Twitch, we do play games, obviously, but we also do a lot of political streams where we discuss either like local politics, as I am from Los Angeles, or we talk about United States politics. And then on YouTube, I make political commentary videos as well as sketches.
Awesome. And I believe it was only semi-intentionally, but we have several stories in the rundown to tap into your own personal interests. So we're gonna talk a little bit about Disney, which you have a personal history with. We do have some local news. We're gonna talk a little bit about video games and the target of one of your most popular viral videos, Kirsten Sinema, is gonna appear in the show as well. So we've got a lot of fun to get to. Exactly. Oh, everybody's favorite. Who wouldn't love her? Anyway, if you're watching this, thank you, first of all. If you're not watching this, you couldn't hear what I just said. So that's a weird thing to start off with. But anyway, if you wouldn't mind liking the stream, sharing the stream so that people know that we're live, that would be awesome. And as we go through, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, and we'll be responding as we go. Oh, early again, heads up, at least for today. After the show at 12 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time is going to be our live monthly Q&A, which normally takes place in the middle of the month, but yeah, stuff happened. But anyway, we are going to be meeting up. So if you are a tier 3 member or you'd like to upgrade your membership, we're going to be doing that a little bit later on today. People have already submitted a bunch of awesome questions and topics of conversation. We always have a lot of fun. So you can join that and that'll be awesome. And today is going to be a big old day on the network. You've got us. Then you've got Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie coming up right after the Damage Report. It's got Dr. Rashad Ritchie. It has to. It's in the contract. But also Dan Evans for the first time on Indisputable. How exciting is that? Tell me you don't want to see that. And then right after that, you've got Reactions with Rayvana. And then the main show comes up. There's a lot of stuff. So buckle up. Hold on to your butts. There's a lot of news coming. But with that said, Sabrina, you ready to talk about some news?
I'm holding on to my butt.
Okay, let's do it. We've been sort of waiting with bated breath to find out if Joe Biden and the Biden administration are going to make good on one of their oft-time stated campaign promises to eliminate at least some student loan debt. Depending on when you talk to him, there's a different threshold for how much he might eliminate. But we've been waiting and waiting month after month for him to do this. Well, he hasn't so far. I don't know, maybe we've come up with a reason why, because Nancy Pelosi had this to say about President Biden's student loan debt yesterday.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress. And I don't even like to call it forgiveness because that implies a transgression. It's not to be forgiven, just freeing people from those obligations. The difference between the president can't do it. So that's not even a discussion. Not everybody realizes that, but the president can only postpone, delay, but not forgive.
Okay, so we chose to include that weird thing in the middle where she pretends that she has like empathy for the people with the student loan debt as she just goes out. Like, it's an example of that tweet thing of like literally no one, Nancy Pelosi. Oh, did you know he can't actually do it? Like, no, nobody. What are you talking about? How is that your addition to this conversation? And we're gonna get into the actual whether what she's saying is true and give you some reactions and all that. But Sabrina, what did you think about that as that was starting to spread yesterday on Twitter?
I mean, it doesn't surprise me that she would say something like that. I mean, she's worth like what, over $100 million?
Jesus.
But yeah, she it is worth quite a bit. But also, I think it was very misleading for her to even say that at all, because that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Like, it's, we'll get into the politics of it and all that, but also, well, I think it's fairly clear, it's been fairly well established that here at the Damage Report, we don't like when people freak, I almost swore, when people lie to you about stuff like that. I like it less when they're Democrats, actually. So let's run through a bit of what has been said and what now needs to be said because of Nancy Pelosi. And then we'll get into the strategy of it, the tactics of it. Anyway, Biden has said for a long time that he would forgive $10,000 in student debt for all borrowers and the rest of the debt for those who attended public colleges or historically black colleges and universities and earn less than $125,000 a year. In all, that would slash the country's $1.7 trillion outstanding student loan debt by about a third, according to some people. So that would still leave a ton, but clearly that would be a lot of help for some individuals. It's not nearly as much as what a lot of progressives have been calling for, and even people who aren't progressive. So Senator Chuck Schumer for months has been calling for $50,000 of federal student loan debt to be eliminated. He has repeatedly said that Biden can accomplish it with the flick of a pen. On Tuesday of this week, Schumer, who wore a face covering emblazoned with hashtag cancel student debt around the Capitol, said he believed they were making progress in convincing the Biden administration to act. He said that the White House concerns about the legality of forgiving student loan debt had largely gone away. Quote, "We don't hear much of that anymore." Enter Nancy Pelosi, who chose to the next day restart the conversation. And the White House has previously said that they are reviewing whether it has the legal powers to cancel student loan debt through executive action. So That's Sabrina, that's one of the weirder things about it is, like, Biden has a fairly well stated position. Much of the debate so far has been how much should be eliminated. To this late in the game, try to eliminate the entire thing, add it to the stack of stuff that supposedly Congress is gonna get to when they haven't even demonstrated ability to get the infrastructure bill through or the For the People Act. Like, where's the minimum wage increase? Like, yeah, let's just add another thing onto there. There's nothing that Biden can do himself, have no expectations on Joe Biden. That's what it feels like she's doing there.
No, I agree with you. And I just want to ask, are you going to play the part about the right wing talking point? Because that was the most
yes.
awful
well, why
part.
Why don't we
okay.
do that?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's get to that now. So actually, we're gonna turn that in one sec. I wanna give you the legality, and then because that really gets into, I think, the political conversation and the tactics of it. But what the issue with what Nancy Pelosi says is that it is just not generally believed that what she is saying is true. According to the founder of the Project on Predatory Student Lending at Harvard Law School, Tony Merrill, the Constitution gave Congress the authority to control property of the government like debts owed to it. And Congress, Merrill said, granted the Secretary of Education, who works for the president, the quote, specific and unrestricted authority to create and to cancel or modify debt owed under federal student loan programs. Lou Carine of Yale Law School says, basically, it's like the power that a prosecutor has to determine whether to bring charges against somebody. The prosecutor might think that a person has committed a crime, but decide not to bring a case against them for whatever reason. It's a little bit similar, actually, to the Obama administration's federal stance on marijuana crimes, saying, okay, we're not actually going to change the law, but we're not going to enforce the law. They could, in theory, do that. So again, like, I don't know where she's getting that information. My guess is her butt, but she isn't bringing sources. She wasn't ringed with lawyers who were saying this is the fact. So that definitely bothers me.
And yeah, then on top and of please that, correct me if I'm wrong really quick, but I mean, during the Obama administration, they were able to like change the way that student loans work. So that way they had to like cut out the middlemen of banks. Yes. So that way it would only be more of like a government thing. So that way the government would get that money. So it's like you can change a lot when it comes to student loans. The president can. So that,
Yeah. Let's turn to what you were asking about. So Nancy Pelosi wants you to believe that Biden can't cancel student loan debt, but that's not all she had to say. She also seems to think that it might be a bad idea anyway. So that's fun. He or she is trying to make that case.
That would be an attitude that people would have. But even take it on top of that, suppose your family was not, your child just decided they want to, at this time, not want to go to college, but you're paying taxes to forgive somebody else's obligations. You may not be happy about that.
Okay. So, Sabrina, as you were alluding to, that is generally a talking point that we hear from the right.
Absolutely. And it does not surprise me at all, because I think that, you know, maybe socially, Nancy Pelosi can be a little bit more progressive. But when it actually comes to, you know, purse strings being affected, she's a little bit more conservative than people are led to believe. And the fact that she would use that specific right-wing talking point it doesn't surprise me, because, you know, you got to say, like, yeah, for sure, people are going to be upset that their taxes are going towards somebody else that, you know, it doesn't, like, they're not directly benefiting from it. And it's like, okay, that's what's been happening. Am I going to get a refund on all of the military jets? Am I going to get a refund on all of the drones, on the bombs? I don't love my tax money going towards that. I think we can, you know, spare some change for college student debt.
Exactly. It's such an on its face stupid point, because, like, yeah, nobody's like, hand me the budget. Oh, it's this. Okay, let me read it. Okay, I'm gonna read it. No, I'm good with all this. I'm good with every. Man, you guys nailed it on the first try. Nobody actually thinks that. That's a stupid thing to say. Everybody has issues with the way the federal government spends money, and the way that we deal with that is by trying to elect politicians that will change the distribution. That's most of what politics is. You would expect that the Speaker of the House would be familiar with that process. And here's the thing, it's not even that she's 100% wrong that some people would have a problem with it. Every time I've ever tweeted about student loan debt cancellation, some people are like, hey, I paid off mine. Okay, I get that. Thank you for, again, it's like sort of posting your L's. That's a bad thing about you, that it would bother you that someone else gets help that you no longer need. It's like, hey doctor, why are you stitching their wound closed? I'm not bleeding anymore. What the hell is wrong with you? Why is this one area where we carve out, like, aggressive, bombastic selfishness is supposed to be a morally superior position? Okay, so you have this approach to student loan debt. That's a bad thing about you. There's still time to change. I hope that you evolve. That's my only response when someone says something like that.
It's weird how they want other people to suffer like they did. And also, those people who have now paid off their student loan debt, I imagine, are a little bit older. College has gotten so much more expensive since then. Mm-hmm. Maybe your student loan debt wasn't as bad before. And again, I'm sorry that happened, that it had to be so much. But I mean, yeah, you shouldn't want people to suffer just because you suffered.
That doesn't seem like it should need to be said, but clearly it does need to be said. Drink That OJ on Twitch says, I paid off $140K in student loans and I still support forgiving all student loan debt. Look, I can say for me personally, I did not have $140,000. I have paid off all of my student loan debt. And I would not for a second try to stop other people from being relieved of the burden that I had to clear myself. That is a crazy thing to say. And by the way, let's have that debate. How about that? Let's have another sort of debate too, because when she says the president can't do it, she's speaking with confidence about something that is not established. But I get that even Biden isn't sure, I suppose. Here's the thing. If you're, let's say that you're wrong, or someone might challenge it. Okay, so here's what you could do in theory. You could do it, you could cancel the student loan debt, and you could have someone challenge it. You could have, I don't know, Kevin McCarthy, you could have Mitch McConnell try to stop it in court. And probably somebody would try to do that. And then you know what we could have? We could have a national conversation about how Joe Biden and the Democrats are trying to help people who are suffering, and the Republicans are desperately trying to give them their debts. Biden has taken the burden, taken your debt, and Mitch McConnell is trying to put it back on top of your shoulders. Let's have that conversation between now and the midterms. How about that? But no, rather than actually adjudicate it publicly and let the American people know where the two sides stand, they do it secretly behind closed doors. Or another way of looking at it is, instead of having a difference in the stance, right now there is no difference. Neither side is trying to relieve the crushing financial burden of your student loan debt. So it just morally, it's abhorrent. Strategically, it's stupid. Legally, it isn't true at all. She's wrong in all 3 out of 3. Great job, Nancy Pelosi. Any final thoughts, Sabrina?
Yeah, super, super disappointed in Nancy Pelosi. I totally think we need to, you know, eliminate student loan debt and make, you know, college for free. And if her issue is like supposedly working class people don't want to be paying college for, you know, others, then maybe we change how that's funded. Maybe we look at like the College for All Act that Bernie Sanders had written years ago about, you know, making Wall Street and like putting putting taxes on Wall Street, like on like speculation and stuff to fund this, because then she wouldn't be able to have that argument anymore. Because, you know, her party is supposed to be the class of working class people, and that's who she's trying to appeal to when she says that. But that, that wouldn't be an issue if we could just change how this is structured, how we get those taxes to fund for these things.
100%. Yeah, 100%. These are all conversations that I would love for us to actually be having publicly and have politicians with different sides on it. Anyway, let's go to something super fast sort of related to this. It unfortunately isn't that often that the federal government really goes out of its way to spend money to help regular people. We would like them to do that because we believe that would relieve a lot of suffering. It would make the country stronger. And now we have more evidence that that is true, because for once the federal government did actually try to help people in several different spurts. They did COVID aid that came in a number of different forms. What effect did that have? Well, the huge increase in government aid prompted by the pandemic cut poverty nearly in half this year from pre-pandemic levels and pushed the share of Americans in poverty to the lowest level on record. The decline in poverty, by the way, you can see in this chart, is 3 times higher than the previous record. And you know, dentists don't want you to know about this one secret trick, but all it took was actually investing in poor people, like trying to relieve their suffering, whether through direct stimulus, whether through unemployment insurance, whether through increased spending on things like food stamps and those sorts of things. What do you know? It actually helped out. And what I love about this, Sabrina, is we have been, like I was gonna say, we've been through multiple cycles of this. Several of the cycles I'm thinking of were before you were born, but we've been through multiple cycles of, let's do these massive tax cuts, and oh, it's gonna be totally cool because we're gonna do it for the rich, and then it's gonna like trickle down. It's gonna be totally cool. You're gonna love it. I know. It's never actually worked in practice, but we should do it anyway. Well, here's the thing: it actually worked. They gave money to poor people, and they're less poor. Shouldn't an experiment actually working like convince people at least somewhat as much as a whole bunch of failed experiments that never accomplished what they were stated to do? So anyway, it's certainly a good result, though. What do you think of this?
No, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, because of all of like the COVID aid that people received this last year, but also the rent moratoriums that were enacted in lots of places, I think had a huge impact on people. But obviously it's temporary, because at the end of the moratoriums, that rent needs to be paid back. And that used to be people's biggest expense. So now that courts are opening back up, people are getting evicted. So I don't think that this is going to last very long. Obviously, a lot of like the COVID aid programs are also getting cut short. All the while, these big companies were accepting these loans, these PPP loans, and they still, you know, laid off all of these workers, and they're not hiring people back right now. And that's, I don't know how much longer this is going to last. Although, at least in regards to like jobs, I think that we might see slight wage increases, because now, since people, you know, would rather stay home and be safe, and they're not accepting these low wages anymore. So I think maybe poverty won't like go back to how it was before, but I do at least think that increased wages, because they're going to have to go up. They're going to need workers, or they're going to stay short staffed. I think that will at least positively impact the poverty levels in the coming years, but I think expenses like rent are still going to keep people down.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. And it's one of the reasons I want to talk about this is that a lot of these measures were temporary. Even in the articles sort of like giving credit to the Biden administration, they also point out a lot of this is going to go away, but it doesn't have to. What if the American people got a taste for, oh wait, actually like some of the aid can come to people like me. It doesn't just have to go to, you know, like artificially boosting the profitability of oil companies, defense contractors, and ever decreasing the share of taxes that are paid by corporations and the wealthy. You mean like you can actually spend on me? Yeah, in theory they could. The only thing so far that's supposed to last is gonna be the child tax credit, which is a part of this. But other things could be done. I would love for the Democrats to actually take some lessons from this. This stuff is both possible and popular. Like those are the two things you need in politics. You got both. For some reason, you're not gonna run it. I wonder why. I think we can probably figure that out. But anyway, so some good results we will see. You mentioned really fast as one final point. You mentioned the eviction moratorium. So that is due to end in less than 3 days. This morning, Biden said he called on them to extend it. We'll see if they do that. He certainly waited until the last moment. It is incredibly consequential. The fates of millions rest on that. So we'll be waiting to find out what happens. In any event,
he's really kicking the can down the road, though. I mean, yeah. you can keep extending this, but a lot of landlords are still expecting people to pay back each month that they missed, and nobody's gonna have that. You're just kicking the can down the road. You need to really forgive the rent that people missed or come up with other housing alternatives for people, because it's gonna be bad.
Yeah, exactly. Like just adding more and more to what a person owes. If you don't give them additional means or reduce it, you're totally right. At least in the short term, kicking the can down the road at least keeps people off the streets, at least. But you're totally right. It's not a permanent solution. Okay, we are gonna have to take our first break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about the infrastructure bill and some of the people who are trying to destroy the entire process. Hey, what do you know? We found people on both sides of the aisle, so that's fun. We'll be back after this. Anyway, hey everybody, we're back on the news side of things, so thank you for being here. Tune into the next break to find out what happened with my hair. Anyway, with that, why don't we jump into the next story. Yesterday, the Senate voted to advance the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. So just to be clear, if you've been following this process, that's the bad one. It's the small one that only does like the absolute bare minimum, and even while doing it, privatizes a bunch of stuff that's currently public. So it's not good. But anyway, that deal still faces several obstacles to becoming law, including being turned into formal legislative text, which by the way, like let me translate that for you, means actually writing the bill. It's just an agreement. It's like a loose structure, a framework. Anyway, it also has to clear final votes in the closely divided Senate and House. So we know that Mitch McConnell this morning was saying, I want an open process with lots of votes on amendments. Yes, because he was very big on giving the opposing side a whole bunch of time to change bills when he was in control of the Senate, those months ago. But anyway, Sabrina, what we have so far, at least according to our most recent understanding of that bipartisan bill, is that it includes $110 billion for roads, bridges, and major projects, $66 billion for passenger and freight rail, $39 billion for public transit, $65 billion for broadband, down from the $100 billion that Biden had recently talked about, $17 billion for ports and waterways, and $46 billion to help states and cities prepare for droughts, wildfires, flooding, and other consequences of climate change, according to a White House official who detailed it on the condition of anonymity. So that's like less than 5% of the bills on climate change.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's kind of a little bit. I mean, just this last year, I mean, the skies were orange for like a week, less than a year ago. And it was like less than 5%? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so people are asking, wait, so it passed, but it didn't pass? Well, no, they voted to advance. So now it's going to be taken up. They're going to be doing it or whatever. But we have to see. We don't know. Like, and the details right now, like, we knew that this bipartisan bill wasn't going to be great in some of these areas. We knew that. We knew that it's not going to take seriously climate change or whatever. The real question is going to be like the plan is going according to plan right now. They've got their terrible bipartisan infrastructure bill. We have to see a couple things could potentially happen. Either they do an actual good reconciliation bill that makes good on the promises that they said that it would, or they try to do a terrible one and the progressives vote it down, or they don't even do one at all. And as of right now, there's some reason, which we'll get to in a bit, to think that they might not. And then presumably the progressives would vote down not only that, but would vote down this. Because remember, they're not gonna do one if they don't do the other. That was the idea the whole time. So what, I mean, Sabrina, so far the room, you're reading it. What do you think about that? Do you think they're gonna end up doing both? Are they gonna do one, or is nothing gonna get passed in the end?
I really think nothing's gonna get passed. I would hope that maybe the progressives hold out, because this does not look very good at all. But I don't know. I haven't been following with how like AOC, Rashida Tlaib, I don't know if they're for this right now. Have they said anything?
Well, they've said that mainly what they say is you can have the bipartisan bill, but that is contingent on, we were gonna simultaneously pass, we wanna make sure that the reconciliation bill is what it needs to be. And if it isn't, then we're not gonna do that. That is what multiple representatives have said in the past. Is it enough to tank it? I don't know. The House is very closely split. So if all of the Republicans go against it, which they will, it should only take a few Democrats to tank it. The same, basically the same situation as in the Senate. So that's what they've said. The devil's gonna be in the details. And so far the details look rife with devils, but what we're gonna have to see. Yeah. Now, why don't we jump ahead to the next part of this? I'm gonna skip over Biden saying that what they did yesterday is proof that he's right on bipartisanship. That is very much yet to be seen, buddy. Pump the brakes, Biden, okay? Pump the Camaro's brakes. But that said, we are moving forward on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And as we do it, who do you know? Kyrsten Sinema's up to say, well, I like this one, but this big reconciliation one that you're talking about, I'm not a fan of that. She says, I have also made clear that while I support beginning this process, I do not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion. And in the coming months, I will work in good faith to develop this legislation with my colleagues and the administration to strengthen Arizona's economy and help Arizona's everyday families get ahead, which is always foremost on her mind. That's why she voted down the raise of the minimum wage, screwing over so many of her constituents. And I want to be clear, what she says there is, I do not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion. What she did not say is, I don't support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion that isn't paid for, or that is paid for in one particular way that I don't like. She's just saying, I don't want it to be a big bill. I don't care how you pay for it. I'm not interested. We're not doing it. And that is the bare minimum of what some have been saying it is going to be. And if she votes against it, presumably it doesn't happen. So we've entered the most fun time of the year, Sabrina, the time where, you know, President Sinema gets to decide what scraps the peasants get.
$3.5 trillion? I don't think so.
I wondered why you'd put on your glasses. Thank you.
Yes, these are specifically my Kyrsten Sinema glasses. I feel like, especially now with the purple hair, I'm unfortunately embodying her.
Did that make you like a bit cautious about dyeing your hair? Is it the possibility that people would think you were doing it as an ode to the senator?
Yeah, I'm just such a big fan.
But anyway, you know, she might blow this whole thing.
Well, and the thing is, she, now that she's actually in office, she really just seems like her priority is gaining more support from the right. I don't know how much that's going to get her. I don't know if that's going to save her come, you know, re-election time. But yeah, she's just real wishy-washy all of a sudden now, and definitely has just changed so much. I don't like this President Sinema at all.
I'm not a fan of her. I like her about as much as I like President Manchin, who I haven't even heard him weigh in. I'm sure he's gonna say something unbearable today. So everybody, you know, hold on your butts for that as well. But Yeah. Now people are fighting back, but we're going to read you. We're going to read you some statements about what Sinema is saying from some good progressives who, unfortunately, because of the way the government is set up, don't have any influence over her because they're in the House, not in the Senate. So they can't like override or vote or anything. But Representative Ocasio-Cortez said, good luck tanking your own party's investment on childcare, climate action, and infrastructure while presuming you'll survive a 3-vote House margin, especially after choosing to exclude members of color from negotiations and calling that a bipartisan accomplishment. So I believe the entire group in the Senate that was involved in that was white. So she's implying there, again, we can tank this just as readily as you can. The issue with that is, and it's unfortunate because obviously I like Representative Ocasio-Cortez, is that again, like always in politics, this is asymmetric warfare. Sinema can tank it in the Senate. They can tank it in the House, but that isn't equal because one side wants things to be done and the other side doesn't really care. So yeah, you can both stop the process, but you don't want the process to stop. She doesn't care what happens or if nothing happens, she's perfectly fine with it. So the joke is unfortunately on Representative Ocasio-Cortez there. But finally, Rashida Tlaib says, Representative Tlaib says, Sinema seems not to care that her own state is flooding, the West is burning, and infrastructure around the country is crumbling. Sinema is more interested in gaining GOP friends and blocking much needed resources than fighting for her residents' future. And she links to an article about a 4-year-old who was missing after a flash flood in Arizona. So I don't know. Sabrina, what do you think about their points there? Any chance they'll be effective on the senator?
Well, their points, no, but I hope that at least like her constituents will recognize that she's just kind of a bit of a phony and that she does not care about, you know, their own interests. So I would hope that, you know, she doesn't stick around for too long.
Yeah. That's all I hope. I hope. yeah, it's a run, by the way, regardless of what happens, and like you predicted that nothing would pass. I am feeling more like that each day. It is a reminder that like Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, we on the left need to fight every battle all the time. That's what we have to do. We have to defeat we have to primary everyone. We have to win all the general elections. I know some people would say, well, look, she sucks and the progressives aren't going to be able to prevail. So what you should do is just give up, just back off the whole thing. Well, I don't understand how that gets Sinema out of office or gets someone worse to beat her or whatever. She's another person we need to beat, and we need to beat Manchin, we need to beat Tester, and we need to beat Warner, we need to beat all of them, unfortunately. But that is unfortunately the only path that actually gets us to where we need to be. We can want stuff, wishing accomplishes few things though. Anyway, let's very briefly touch base on another thing that might tank this. In addition to Kyrsten Sinema, who might lead to this infrastructure bill getting absolutely nowhere, you also have a Republican lurking in the shadows and trying to influence the process. This is Donald Trump, who apparently is sad that they have advanced to the bipartisan infrastructure bill being taken up in the Senate, but that does not mean that his opposition to it is done or that the bill will actually pass. So he has been trying to lobby them, sometimes in public with statements, sometimes we were finding out anonymously, like he's doing it behind the scenes. We don't know exactly who, exactly what he's saying. But his aides say that his opposition is based on the merits. At a time of fear around inflation, he opposes additional spending and believes the framework of the potential compromise is far too tilted towards environmentally conscious projects and not hard infrastructure. That is poppycock, as they might have said at one point. He didn't read it. He doesn't know what the split is. He doesn't know. Yeah, he's like, I don't like the too much on climate resiliency. I don't like that. I would lower that by 10%. Come on, Sabrina, who thinks that that's why he's trying to destroy this thing?
No, yeah, I don't think anybody believes that or believes that he's competent enough to even actually change or read any of that. I'm all with you there.
Yeah, no, it's not true. Like, and once you like talk to either him or his aides about it, it becomes clear that that's not really what it's about. One Trump aide said they had 4 years to do an infrastructure deal with someone who knows infrastructure and actually builds buildings. I'm just speaking for myself. He hasn't said, oh, they should have done it with me. But if they actually wanted infrastructure, they would have done it when President Trump was in there. Okay, so it's personal. It could be the exact same bill. He just wants to be the one who passed it because he knows building. He doesn't know anything about building. His name has been slapped on a few things that other people have built. That has been his contribution for the past couple of decades. And even if he built a hotel once, what does that have to do with like revamping the interstate highway system or building high speed rail or renovating bridges and dams? When has he ever done any of that? Shut up with your nonsense. This is just personal. But look, we can diagnose why he might be against it. What's important for now is that he is against it. So my question for you, Sabrina, is there were 17 Republicans who supported advancing the process and taking up the bill in the Senate, implying that there are not only enough Republicans to potentially pass it, but they could even lose some and still pass it if they're being honest. Are they gonna have the 17? Is it possible that between now and when the vote is gonna happen, Trump can pressure enough of them that maybe it doesn't come down to Sinema? Maybe the Republicans don't actually support this thing in the end.
I don't know how much Trump pressure will affect anything. I think that maybe now that like he's out of office, I wonder how much influence he still has on conservative like politicians. I don't know how much pressure he would even add.
Yeah, that's a good question. We almost did a story today about one of the people he supported in a primary in Texas this week lost. We might cover that tomorrow on the show. So yeah, there are some reasons to believe potentially that his ability to influence them is beginning to wane. We'll have to see. But what I want the audience to know is that there are a lot of potential roadblocks still. Some of them are literally in the room doing the negotiating, people like Kyrsten Sinema, and some are like Donald Trump, who just they don't want Biden to be seen to have a win. Even if the bill is far smaller than he said it would be, more limited, all of that, it still could be presented as a win, and they don't want that. Okay, with that, we are gonna go to our second break though. When we come back, some people getting vaccinated in secret, we'll break down why and how that's working after this. Thank you everybody for being here. It's me and Sabrina. We're having a lot of fun and we've got a couple more stories for you. But after that, there's so much coming up, including our tier three member Q&A, which is coming at noon Pacific. You've got Indisputable with Rashad Ritchie and Dan Evans. That's gonna be a lot of fun. Also coming up on Saturday, July 31st, you've got a Get Out the Vote rally for Nina Turner. Cenk Uygur is gonna be doing live commentary starting at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time. It is like go time for Nina Turner. Bernie Sanders is heading to go help her get out the vote. AOC was there recently. They are going up against millions of dollars that are being spent to attack Nina Turner, which is all the proof you should need that they don't want her in office. Why do you think that is? Because she might be effective in advocating for her values. So anyway, we're gonna be tracking that. It's gonna be live. You can watch it. And with that said, let's get into a couple more stories. There's a big problem of not nearly enough people getting vaccinated, but there's a potential solution, at least for a few, to face the social pressure to not get vaccinated. Some are doing it in secret. Let's jump to this video.
Closely with our pharmacists who are leading our vaccine efforts through our organization. And one of them told me the other day that they've had several people come in to get vaccinated who have tried to sort of disguise their appearance and even went so far as to say, please, please, please don't let anybody know that I got this vaccine. I don't want my friends to know, but I don't want to get COVID. I want to get the vaccine. But they're very concerned about how their people that they love within their family and within their friendship circles and their work circles are going to react if they find out that they got the vaccine.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, Sabrina. We know about how much pressure there is out there. What do you think about this as a solution?
I think it's a great solution. I mean, it makes me sad. It genuinely makes me sad for these people that they are so scared to talk to their loved ones and their family members or their social groups that about them getting the vaccine. It's just, That sucks. That's a lot of influence. And people in like maybe more Midwest rural areas, they do have to consider their actions and how it impacts their tiny little community. So I think it's a great idea. I think if that's what it's gonna take to get more people vaccinated, I'm all for it.
Yeah, maybe. What sucks about it is Like, it is bad enough that you would open yourself up to getting the virus. It's obviously worse that you would try to put social pressure on people, especially people who are in your family, like people who love you and you're supposed to love them, that you would try to pressure them to do that. But then on top of it, to then say, don't get vaccinated because that's being a sheep, instead bow down to my pressure. So that's a weird thing where you're like, you're trying to make people conform by pretending that it's the opposite of conformity. But then on top of that, one of the most insidious lies that's been told about the vaccine is, and I don't know if Sabrina, if you've seen this, the concept of shedding. Have you seen this?
What?
I worry about shedding too. All of my clothes are covered with dog fur. But no, they say that if you get the vaccine, you can shed vaccine stuff that gets other people sick around you. So think about the mental gymnastics necessary for that. So you going out and protecting yourself from a virus isn't you protecting you, it's you endangering me. And you say that I'm being dumb because I won't protect myself from germs. No, I am the invisible vaccine shedding germs. It is such like an attempt to contort reality. It's basically gerrymandering reality. It's this weird shape you've made everything into so that you can feel like you're still intelligent.
This is the weirdest game of 3D chess that they're trying to play. And it does not make sense at all. That's just,
I don't like it.
That's confusing and sad. And it's weird because nobody made this big of a deal about like previous vaccines that are necessary for like school or jobs or traveling to certain areas. Maybe some mom groups in Orange County brought back measles or something, but I mean, like, yeah, it's just, it's so polarized, like you said.
Yeah, guys, just the worst. And look, if you're in an area and you're feeling this pressure, I totally get it. Like, the thing is, you can get vaccinated and your family never needs to know. It's sad. I wish that you could feel free to try to get them to be vaccinated because that is an act of love. But if you can't do that, I don't want anyone's life to be any more difficult than it already is. Go get vaccinated in secret, honestly. I think that's totally fine. I hope that it becomes the new thing. I don't know. Can we make a TikTok and get more people to do that? I don't know. Anyway, and by the way, this is a new version of, we had already, I think, previously talked about this. If we could jump ahead, defiant teenagers have been trying to get around their parents trying to stop them from being vaccinated. That's been a thing for a little bit as well. So yeah. Ugh. Anyway, I think we have a little bit more video actually of Anderson Cooper talking to Dr. Frase, who was in that first video about this.
A lot of them have had, the few that I've been able to personally talk to, they have had some experience that sort of changed their mind from the viewpoint of those in their family, those in their friendship circles or their work circles. And they came to their own decision that they wanted to get a vaccine, they did their own research on it, and they talked to people and made the decisions themselves. But even though they were able to make that decision themselves, they didn't want to have to deal with the peer pressure or the outburst from other people about them, quote, giving in to everything. They made a decision for themselves and they wanted it just to be for themselves.
Yeah, I get it. Look, I sometimes poo-poo people who are like, they're like I'm doing the research. I'm talking to doctors. I'm really trying to figure out. I don't think that it should take like 2 months. But look, if you actually do that and in the end you end up getting it, okay, good. If that got you there, try to expedite the process though, because there are a lot of cases going around out there. Any final thoughts, Sabrina?
Yeah, I don't know how much I believe that part either, because they say that, you know, they're doing the research and they're taking the time, but we have seen the positive effects of the vaccine since people started getting it like at the end of last year. It works. What more do you need?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I don't think you should need anything else. If you do, though, I did see someone on Twitch said it's like free walk-ins at Walgreens, also $2 Arizona iced tea. So, you know, you get vaccinated, you get yourself an iced tea. It's really cheap. That seems like a pretty good deal. Anyway, we are running very low on time. So really fast, let's jump to our last story. Yesterday, we told you about the walkout at Activision Blizzard, a number of different employees protesting the working conditions there that have been the source of a new lawsuit against the company, alleging a sort of persistent multi-year frat boy-like environment that's been created there. And one of the details that we just found out about is about the worst. So let's bring up this picture and we'll tell you about the Cosby Room. So supposedly at BlizzCons for a number of different years, one of the workers there had a hotel suite that they had named after Bill Cosby. It was being described as a hot spot for informal networking at BlizzCon, where people looking to make inroads with the company would go to meet and hang out with some of its top designers. The original intent wasn't sexual, they say, saying it was a reference to Bill Cosby's iconic ugly sweaters. But at that point, Cosby already faced multiple sexual assault accusations, and other sources apparently understood it as a reference to them. So they can say that that's not what it was about. It is clear that it seems to have been. So this is just one of the details, Sabrina, and we've talked about a lot, but it's a sort of weird thing for professionals to name a room after.
Yeah, it's weird, and I don't believe them at all when they're saying that, oh, well, it's the sweaters. Come on. And especially like the gaming industry culture itself has been very toxic and bro-y and usually at the expense of like other female workers, where even before the Bill Cosby thing, female workers in the gaming industry have been complaining about this culture that like results in their own sexual harassment and different wages for the same work. This has been a consistent issue in this industry.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that you know, not only the current workers are supporting this lawsuit, that is great and much needed, but that there was that letter going around of more than 3,000 current and former workers. We talked about that there was that coordinated logout someone told us about on European servers. Sometimes when you have an entire industry with problems, you need a moment to sort of crystallize it, to organize people around. And perhaps this can be that. I mean, Activision Blizzard is, you know, it's a very important studio. It draws a lot of attention. I've seen some people like, so Ashley Birch is one of the writers and actors on Mythic Quest, which is one of the most high profile TV shows about the gaming industry, talking about this. It's becoming a more high profile thing. And considering that, like, you know, you've got your Cosby rooms and all that insane stuff, then you also have just a lot of women who will never be promoted and will never make as much money as other men and all of that. This is an industry. It's terrible for them. It's terrible at large, and something needs to be done. So hopefully this lawsuit will be successful, that people will stay in solidarity with them. That's what I'm hoping for.
I hope so.
Any other thoughts? Yeah.
No, I agree. Stand in solidarity with them.
Yeah. Okay, so we have very little time, but I do want to let you know, I am seeing what's going on in the chat. We're gonna talk about it perhaps after our next break. Things have been moving fast in the sub donation realm. So yes, am I getting a little bit concerned, a little bit nervous? Perhaps I am.
Purple we'll talk hair. About that soon. Purple hair.
Oh God, I barely have hair now. Do I really need to draw more attention to it? But anyway. For now, though, we are going to have to end. So if you're watching on one of our linear platforms on the skinny bundles, thank you so much for watching. We do still have nearly another half an hour coming for those of you watching on the members app on Twitch and on YouTube, in which we're going to be talking about DaBaby. I've been waiting to talk about DaBaby for a long time. Finally, we have an excuse. We're going to be talking about Disney. We're going to be talking about Josh Hawley and how he just wants you to love America more. Isn't that going to be fun? So we'll have all that for you. And a little bit more updates about some of the TYT content that's coming up soon. So with that, we're gonna take a couple minute break, but we'll be right back after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.